Call the meeting to order of the Riff Force EDC, Wednesday, April 12th, 2017. Eric, may I have a roll call, please?
Sure. Ms. Moss?
Here.
Mr. Brangle? Mr. Neubecker?
Here.
Mr. Hazinski?
Here.
Ms. English Dixon?
Here.
Mr. Graham?
Here.
And Mr. O'Connor? And we have four.
Okay, thank you. I see no public here, and Deb, unless you want to make a comment, we have no. Okay, all right. First item on the agenda is approval of the minutes of the prior meeting. Do we?
Yep.
We just got them.
Oh yes. Yep. Okay. Let me take a moment. I apologize. I haven't seen these yet. Were they in the email?
No, I just finished
okay.
them today.
Okay.
It's still wet.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a little damp.
Do I have a motion for approval?
So moved.
A second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The minutes are approved. Thank you. Our primary piece of business on the agenda is discussion of the requests for proposals or qualifications for the Lake and Park redevelopment. And we have with us Jennifer Tammen of Municipal Advisor from Ellers, who's been hired by the village to assist in this process. So you've all been, we shared a memo to Eric from Jennifer discussing approach. And I think that's, the right order of business would be to discuss our past experience and what we've learned from it, and then to try to applying that to discussion of what the process is going to be going forward. So I think maybe what we should do is just before Jennifer has a chance to talk, maybe we should just first of all answer the try to answer questions about what the past experience has been and shed some light on it, and then that can help the rest of our discussion. Then we can give Jennifer a chance to discuss her experience and her ideas about approaching this going forward. So we've had three solicitations on this site in the past. One got one response, one got no responses, and the one that we oversaw last time, which had three responses. Maybe Eric, you want it? You've had experience with the first two. Maybe you could talk and discuss that a little bit, and we could.
I've debriefed Jennifer a little bit on the past and how we got to this point. And so the thing that we talked about previously was to go out and do this again, we wanted a fresh set of eyes and from a consultant standpoint. So that brings Ellers to the table, and that's why Jennifer's here tonight. So originally when we sat down, we talked about process, what an RFP looks like, and Jennifer got into a conversation about, well, is really the RFP the best way to go? Do we look at potentially an RFQ process and really look to hone that down and find a developer that we can select and then work to develop a project with? And so I thought that was a great suggestion. I suggested that she come to this meeting, meet with you all, and have an interactive discussion on whether you think that's a good idea, if you want to go in that direction or go in a different direction. And so really the goal tonight is really to have a conversation about that and then some of the other questions that she's posed so that we can begin to frame that, whatever that RFP, RFQ, whatever that looks like.
Okay. Well, just to comment on the past experience, I think one of the things that was clearly operative are what real estate market conditions are, obviously, determines level of interest. I think in the one that we received no response on, it was really not an opportune time to solicit developers because there really wasn't a lot of money available for investment at the time. Credit conditions were not favorable. But in the last go-around, we did get three responses, and I think it did reflect more developer interest. So I guess like to ask other EDC members how they view the market today and what that might indicate in terms of how what we might expect in terms of response on a current on another initiative.
I had a question about last go around.
Sure.
I was involved at the time or on the board. But the RFP that got three responses, what level of detail was in there that expressed what the community was looking for in the project? Was it pretty much an open box, come and give us your idea? Or did we spell out things that we wanted? Not sure what level of detail we took.
We did spell out the land uses that we thought should be considered for that site, and we expressed a clear preference for mixed-use development. we obviously residential mixed-use, but we were open to a variety of land uses. We didn't, I'm trying to think. We did, we're also specific about the site itself and adjacent sites and the potential for incorporating adjacent sites that weren't under the ownership of the village. Our view was that the site in and of itself doesn't provide adequate a footprint for the level of meaningful development we were seeking, and so we asked the developers to involve adjacent sites, including potentially even the entire half of the block that it sits on. So, and we did get responses that, did that, three responses that did that. So,
Could I just add another point in that? I think potentially to getting to what may be part of your question, Lee, when I think that what we tried very hard to do was to lay out kind of the facts around the site and the options that might be available, but we're looking for the market to speak as to what was a reasonable development that could be successful on the site. I think we tried very hard not to predetermine what the highest and best use might be perceived to be by the development community and have them be creative about how they thought they could create value on that site and then within the constraints of the market. And then then we would basically look at what that came out to be and try to evaluate our comfort with their assessment of market viability in the context of what might work with the village. So if your thing is like, did we say we want apartments? We didn't say that. Or we wanted housing. We said we want it as a mixed-use project that was consistent with the community that would be economically and market appropriate, and there were options to expand it or not or whatever, and kind of laid it there and said, you, the market, come tell us.
Yeah.
And then we could judge from there. I think that was kind of the question you were looking for.
I was just looking for
a bit of context.
I only say that because I've been on the receiving end of these RFPs, and I always find that when the RFP is too open-ended, it made me less inclined to bid on it, because if I know, for instance, someone wanted a website with these components built, and they spelled out what the things were, it was a lot easier to bring a proposal forward. But when a project seems very nebulous, and there might be a site next door, but that would have to go, and there just seems like there's a lot of contingencies. From my perspective, having bid on RFPs like that, it always made me feel like I'm going to get sucked in. I'm going to spend a lot of time helping them figure out what they want, and then not get the job. So I think the points that were raised about picking someone to work with, I like that idea, but I'm not sure how it works best in this scenario. If it's better to try to build out a better RFP that's based on market data, based on what does a community want, what's underserved, do we need housing, what type of housing, without getting so specific. But if we went in, for instance, we said, we've got this lot, we've got these parcels, this is how it will work. We define what the community is going to do to make those parcels available, but we're looking for X amount of parking for the retail ground floor and X amount per unit you build, whether it's apartment or condo. I think just from my perspective and experience, if we have a better parameters for like knowing what they are, less uncertainty, I think that might help attract more tenants as well.
I think that there's probably a little bit of creative tension between the two. I mean, code kind of dictates some of those metrics. Like, if you're going to have retail, you need to have... I mean, some of these things are kind of prescribed. And, you know, they had to keep that stuff in mind. I think at the end of the day, while we didn't ultimately wind up with a project that has moved forward on the site, I think we felt the RFP process brought a diversity of options to the table that were actually very viable and fairly diverse, which is what you really want. I do have a little bit of concern, having gone through kind of that process, that, you know, the after effect process, that sometimes what communities want is not economically or market viable. And we can all kind of sit there and go, it would be really cool, we really need, we really want, but the market's not going to deliver that to you successfully. So to a certain extent, there's got to be a little bit of that kind of, Maybe it's a definitional issue that doesn't constrain creativity, but still give some, you know, box to kind of start working from. I'm a little concerned about too much box, but that's me. Yeah. I mean, because I thought that kind of how we defined it or didn't define it actually worked really well for us last time. Mm-hmm. And I'm not quite sure how you torque that. I'm not really sure, but that's exactly why we have Ehlers to help with that.
Yeah. The other thing we did last time was to, that was different than the prior RFPs, is that we tried to sell development community on River Forest. We had information about the community, its strengths, and why it's a good place to do development. And the village is offering the development community basically partial site assembly. That's what we're offering. We're not offering to give away the site. We didn't offer to subsidize the development in any way. So it really had to be sold in the merits of that this is a good place for private investment. And we tried to do that in the RFP. And I think successfully, right? Because we got responses. So, the problem we ran into was, in terms of it not succeeding, was that we didn't have prior input in what the citizens didn't want, and the most viable economic option that was offered was something that the neighborhood didn't want. So that was which was the apartment development, which had, you know, in our evaluation delivered the highest value, was most likely to succeed, but it wasn't what the board could approve because it wasn't what the community wanted. So I think in this process, and what we talked about is trying to vet that issue ahead of time so that when developers propose, they don't feel like they're wasting their time because they're running into some political opposition.
I think that's the type of thing that whether we do RFQ or RFP, the more we can spell out and eliminate a lot of uncertainty so we don't waste people's time, the more attractive it is for some of the
I thought my impression, obviously I wasn't on the commission at that time, my impression from some village trustees and people in the community that the last proposal involved a significant volume of apartments, a lack of parking, which kind of plus opposition from the school. There was a fair amount of negative feelings about the scope of the physical size of the proposal. I thought maybe I'm maybe that's just my bad recollection.
I don't think it was the scale, Bob. I think it was the concept. Because there were only 90 apartments?
70
apartments. Mm-hmm.
It was not any larger than any other proposal. So in terms of overall massing.
I think the concept of apartments was an issue. I think there was concern about traffic because you had 70 apartments on a corner near a school. I'm not quite sure I quite understood that problem, but it seemed to be a concern. There wasn't a ton of retail. But I don't think it was the scale. I think the biggest issue started with the apartment. Mm-hmm. And then it kind of all went downhill from there.
Yeah. Did we survey the community to see if it was a concern about apartments and primarily about having people move in to get their kids into the school? Or have we looked at other options such as over 55 apartments? And is the community more amenable?
We talked, they were mostly 1 and 2 bedroom apartments, which was not by the metrics, typically the type of unit mix that brings a lot of children. But that still was part of the conversation versus 2 and 3 bedroom condos, which didn't seem to have the same sort of concern, but by the metrics tends to deliver more children into the schools.
Yeah.
So there were opposing positions taken against the apartments that did not necessarily relate to facts. It was more of a sentiment against apartments and thinking that people who rent in apartments are not committed to your community and they are more of a drain on a community than a contributor to the community. Over 55, we had a senior housing option that had been presented. At the end of the day, we felt the EDC just chose to go with the apartments versus the senior housing option.
Plus, at the time, apartments were more attractive for people to move into a community. Condos weren't selling as readily. The economics were different at that time. So yeah. It's part of the consideration.
Right. Yeah, we thought the economics worked the best, but didn't work the best.
But we were concerned that the condos wouldn't move forward.
Right.
Which they didn't.
Okay. So I mean that we. I think it was the overall effort did provide offer more to the development community than had been done in the past in terms of your concern about trying to spell out. But we didn't say build this many condos or do this square footage of retail, and I think I'd agree with Colette that that's not a good idea going forward because it would have the effect of limiting participation rather than expanding it. Yeah.
To her point, though, if the RP, if it was known, for instance, that we wanted senior or let's say single-person condos that are one-bedroom studios that could be senior or, you know, divorcee or whatever. If we had that in there and we knew it was going to be condos, and maybe some of those condos get rented eventually, but condos, that's not one of those variables that someone's coming in, they can run the numbers and they know up front. And it seems that when we're going to get a bunch of different proposals, some from someone pushing the senior option with a different mix of other stuff, one with residential, one with apartments, rather than have that get mucked into it all in the beginning, I think it would be good for the community to come out and say, well, you know, what do we have support for? Or we've got a lot of people who are boomers who are going to be selling their $20,000 a year taxable houses, their kids are out of school. Do we want to try to focus on building some downsize options? That are condos, or do we want apartments, or do we want to go after the student market, or do we want to try to get a WeWork type style building that lets, you know, businesses start and incubators? And so, you know, those are some of the things that, if that discussion happens and the community kind of knows where there's support and where there isn't, I think that that's good information to give to some developers before they put time into trying to make a plan that works.
Yeah, maybe another way to do that would be more from a negative perspective, say, if you propose this, it won't go. I think it's fair to say, if you propose apartments, you're going to meet the same resistance you met last time. It's not going to happen, right?
I think there's a double hit on that one. So
maybe this process, this survey process we're talking about, could ferret some of those issues out, and they could be incorporated in the RFP. But not to say you have to do X, but say better not do Y. That would be a better approach than saying you have to do.
I think we have to be careful about trying to help people figure out what they think the market is. I mean, and I'm really concerned about that, especially now, 3 years hence from the last RFP. It's going to be harder this time to have developers determine what they actually feel comfortable is going to be marketly feasible, because I think there's a perception that the cycle has gone really well, but there's less time remaining than there was perceived to be 3 years ago. And virtually everybody who came to the table felt they had a market viable deal and that they had time to get it up and it would be feasible. And some folks were going to be long-term investors in what they built and some were not. And I think the folks who were looking to be longer-term investors were very much concerned about the market viability of what they were going to build. I think we need to be very careful about trying to predetermine what's market viable. So maybe that gets us to trying to pick the developer, but you know, the challenge becomes many developers are very product-focused. And you can get great qualifications, people who are really good at what they do, but they do one thing. And if you pick somebody because they've got the financial wherewithal, they've got the track record, you do have to think about the fact that you may be still boxing yourself in to a certain extent with spending time trying to develop a project over a period of time, and still, you know, we're chewing up tons of time at this process. And if they only do apartments or they only do seniors, by the time you get the whole thing done, the cycle's closed and you're done. So there's some, you know, eggs and chickens here, you know. And
I guess my point to that, too, I think it's important. I agree with you about it being important that the market can drive it some. But if we're likely going to come down on, you know, this concept, that concept, or that concept, as part of the survey, it would be good to get the data out there so the developer can see it. Because what it does to someone investing, it tells them, okay, I already know I've got the support. I'm not going to be surprised at the 11th hour after I poured all this time and money into the concept.
It's definitely an issue.
So, you know, I don't know that there, my hunch is that there would be a lot of resistance to a senior only or, you know, 55 plus apartment building, high rise, would tax the residents as much with the usage of the schools. You know, it would give options for people. Like my mother, I had to get her into a condo last month, and you know, wouldn't that, you know, the idea of having a place where you could park your parent nearby would be nice, and it might not tax the parking situation as much, depending on, you know, what the development was like.
So are you proposing the idea of doing a village survey before you go down the road with an RFP?
I think it's always useful to have, you know, some parameters. I don't think you can spell everything out, but having some parameters in there so that to the extent that you lay out, these are the no's, don't go here, don't go here. We're open to creativity, but these are things we know that you're going to run into resistance. It makes someone more likely to bid and put time in. That's my perspective. I've dealt with this with different RFPs and everything from websites to programming projects. And the more someone puts stuff in, when I read it through, I'm like, okay, I can bid on this. But if it's too nebulous and too gray and they want me to bring my magic box and one of our boxes are going to get picked, that's scarier to me and makes me less likely to want to put the time in.
But I think the minor difference in the real estate development model versus the services model is maybe what makes this a little bit more challenging. I totally appreciate the client didn't have a freaking clue what they want. How can you propose and actually hit it there? But in the development space, some of the other factors that can influence scale, type, interest, financing may be even more difficult for us to kind of, you know, help shape.
Maybe I'm wrong, but I thought we have an answer to your question, and that's we have a strong preference for mixed use for sale product with as much retail as the market will bear.
Do we need to be
more specific than that?
Is there a draft of our...
Well,
that's what the last one said.
No,
pretty much.
Yeah,
I'm
I mean,
sorry.
We haven't done
well,
the survey.
Well, the last one didn't say
for sale. That's what the trustees
say, that
out in the field, mm-hmm. people want retail. They want that white tablecloth restaurant. They want retail. They want a coffee shop. They want that sort of thing. Now, to Colette's point, that's nice, but how much can you physically do successfully at the corner of Lake and Park? But we know that... We know that rental was a problem. Is it worth the time to see, well, if we change the kind of, I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean,
going back to the village goals in terms of what we want increased property tax base. That's what we want. We're indifferent in some ways to how we get there, right? Or we're not indifferent, but we would be happy to go down a number of paths to get to that goal, right? There could be a variety of different developments on that site that would satisfy that goal, and we could all be happy with, right? So we don't want to go in and say, you know, there's only one path to achieving that goal, right? I think that's fair to say.
I think the survey is tricky.
I think that's probably the only consistent comment you're going to get from anybody on this whole thing is that our intent, which is the driver of this whole commission, is to come up with ways to increase the tax base in River Forest. And we have a site that's underdeveloped and a non-contributor, and we want to try to put it in play. So, world.
Right.
How do we do that?
And if you look, and maybe we can dovetail a little bit to Ehlers here too, is that if you look at this timeline, two things that we are contemplating in here. Number one, the resident survey is early on, so there will be some resident feedback. And then number two, which we didn't do previously, that Ehlers is proposing two instances, are these essentially developer roundtable sessions where they will go ahead and meet with a series of developers, one here at the village and one probably at their office downtown, to basically start to get some of that market intel that we're all talking about here. Is that, look, you know, we have resident expectations and it's important to know what those are, but we have to know what the private market and what the developer market's going to be willing to do. And so that's before we even get to issuing any type of request for blank, we're going to have some of that intelligence information available so the consultant can help fold that into whatever that final RFP/Q looks like.
I think we should characterize the engagement with the community as different than a survey. I don't think that's the answer, because I think what we had last time is that although we had public meetings, everyone was welcome to come. We did not get any public feedback until
a specific
proposal was on the table. We solicited it. We wanted it. We were available for it, but we didn't get it. If we do a survey, it's going to be the reverse. There's going to be a public comment, but there's going to be no chance for interaction, right? What we need is interaction and conversation early on in the process.
Like a community meeting?
So that before there's a proposal on the table and someone feels threatened about it or thinks it's the devil incarnate or whatever, there should be some idea of interaction about, well, this is what the market will bear. This is what we think we can bear. This is what our community, these kind of interactions need to occur so that once proposals are received, there's a sense that the community has been involved in the process. I think that would... could prevent, a last minute kind of effort to stop a project because of a lot of concerns, some in our minds that weren't warranted, but that was beyond the point of discussion because things have been set in stone. If we had had that opportunity to have the interaction ahead of time, I don't think it would have gotten to that point. At least I hope it wouldn't have. Or we could have learned, there are community parameters we need to work within, and we would have done that, right? But we didn't have any sense of what those were in terms of community reaction until after there was a proposal on the table. So that's what I would, and I think the biggest contribution Ehlers could make would be facilitating that kind of interaction rather than,
To that point, you said I think it's a good idea, maybe framing it where we have a forum where we discuss the different options that could potentially happen for housing there, be it condo, senior housing, apartment, whatever, mm-hmm. and let everyone really, raise their concerns. Like, if the concern's about apartments, what is it? Is the concern more about people coming in to use the schools? Because that might be mitigated by senior housing. Or is it just apartment, period? Because those are things that if those discussions happen and the reporters report on it and it's known about in advance, then the people that have concerns, before this process happens and developers start pouring their time into it, that's already there on the record. People can, hear the comments of what the concerns were. And
yeah.
I might be the only person who isn't a great fan of surveys, because I think we could probably pretty much guess what most people are going to say. For retail, they're going to want an Apple store, things of that nature that are hip and bring in a lot of revenue. And they're going to want luxury condominiums for $250,000 or something. The numbers aren't going to fit. I just relate it to, if you ask everybody what color do you want to paint the walls here, we have, 11,000 residents? We'd get possibly 11,000 different colors. I think this committee has to stand up and say, this is the direction we want to go. And if that direction is, we don't know, well, that's the way it's going to be, because from what I can see from the direction the concept of this proposal is, we're going to potentially pick a developer up front and give that person more than just the open forum to say, whatever. We're saying we selected you because we know you can do the projects A, B, or C, or maybe only A.
Maybe only A.
And we go from there. I mean, I've certainly listened to a survey, and I'd be respectful of one, but I think it kind of get the feeling what the results are going to be before we even started, unless it just makes your conscience feel good that we did the survey and how many people responded, and maybe we get 100 people that even say anything, maybe, out of 3,000 families, something like that. Maybe I'm wrong. I just know from past surveys that just from being on the board, I kind of got the answers that we kind of knew before we even took the survey, so...
On the timeline, there's a draft for the village does the survey, but I don't see where the survey data is reviewed and when it's collected or how it's incorporated.
It's not meant to be that prescriptive in terms of the steps that would occur, as part of the timeline.
So was there be an expectation that it's live for 2 weeks, a month?
Well, I think if you look at the need to have to get an RFQ into the process, it only gives you about
2 weeks, right?
2 or 3 weeks to actually get that back to be able to input it into the process. I mean, I think legitimately in River Forest, there are probably 100 people who are actively on point and paying attention to what happens here on a regular basis, and those would be the people we hear from.
Probably.
I think, But I also think one of the issues, and just to be kind of holistic in the review of the last process, I think one of the issues that is going to come up during this outreach to the development community is going to be the perception that River Forest is a closed loop. And that if you are not a part of this community or have been a part of this community, it is increasingly difficult to get support to work in this community. May or may not be true, but I do believe that that is a thought process in the outside developer community that we're going to have to deal with. And that's going to limit the options. If that is a prevailing thought, that will limit the options of parties who are going to come to the table.
And one other comment on the, I second that, Colette. That is got to be a concern out there in the development community. But the, I think the other thing that we talk about, we're talking about possibly an RFQ and RFP process, where it's a phased process where the idea is to limit the amount of time and effort one needs to make before they know that they're being under serious consideration for the project. Well, last time we had a phased process too. We didn't ask for everything up front. We asked for only minimal concept designs initially. Then we asked to come back and do something in more detail. So we tried to be responsive in that way during our last process. But we didn't ask them to come with just with a list of their past projects. We asked them to come with an idea initially. And I don't think that was too much to ask up front. The idea didn't have to be concepted. It just had to be an idea. That's all we asked for initially, so that we knew more than just qualifications in that first phase. So I think if you, I don't know how much better you can do in an RFQ process unless you don't ask for the idea, right? Mm-hmm. And I kind of think asking for an idea is important up front, because then we know what type of real estate they want to pursue on the site, right? We've kind of been pouring at you. Yeah, I hope so. I thought it might be better for you to hear that before you get up and say things that we're going to say. But I would like to give you an opportunity to talk about Ehlers and how you view your role. Maybe you want to get up and there's a microphone on the podium there if you'd like.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I have rollers.
Okay, great. Yeah. There's a mic right
there's one
right
over
there.
There's one up there, right? Right there?
Yeah, on the podium.
Yeah, they're on the podium. This one. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Do I really need a microphone?
We're
going to record it.
Yes. This is a public meeting.
Sorry.
Good evening, everybody. Had an opportunity to meet most of you, but just for the recording, my name is Jennifer Tammann. I'm a municipal advisor and principal of the Illinois office for Ehlers. And with me tonight is my colleague, Maureen Barry. We are the fortunate advisors that are going to be working with the village, and we're really pleased to be here and want to thank you again for the opportunity to come to this meeting and to work with you. A little bit about Ehlers, I don't want to go too far into this, but again, we are municipal financial advisors. We are the only full-service independent municipal advisor in the state of Illinois, and what that means is our services are only to municipal entities, so local governments, school districts, park districts, other municipal entities. We do everything from creating and establishing economic incentive programs such as TIF districts, business districts, and the like, to negotiating and recruiting developers, which is what we're going to talk a little bit about tonight, doing the detailed performance financial analysis on that, as well as preparing financial management plans and then going through and walking through with our clients the issuance of debt for projects that are supporting public projects or participation in public-private partnerships. We've been around for over 65 years. We're housed outside of the Twin Cities. We started out as a company that focused solely on debt issuance, and then found out over the years that the role and the services associated with economic development really go hand in hand in terms of providing that full array of advice and advising to communities that was so vital for communities to help achieve their goals for the community, financial and otherwise. So a little bit about my background. I joined Ehlers. I just had my 3-year anniversary, Maureen. Did you know that? I didn't get any flowers from anybody. Okay. But anyway, it was 3 years ago. But I've been in this real estate development consulting business for about 17 years. So my background is in urban planning and policy and real estate development and economics. So unlike a lot of my colleagues that focus really in hardcore municipal finance and debt issuance, I come at it from the development side and really, you know enough about bond feasibility and analysis to be dangerous. But my love is really in development, zoning, entitlements, and that perform a financial analysis on the real estate economic side. And Maureen has really got a great balance of both financial analysis. She's worked a lot of her career, and I can let her talk too, but worked a lot of her career in municipal government as assistant village manager for a number of municipalities, and has been with Ehlers for about nine years. And she works a lot focused in the economic development world as well as on the bond side. So I think we've got a deep bench, but again, just to talk a little bit about the folks that are before you tonight, we think we've got a well-rounded team to work with the village. So it's a pleasure. If we could, we could maybe get into a little bit of this, and we've already gotten into a lot of it. So I'm grateful for the comments and the discussion that's been put forth to this point. A couple things that I want to point out is that the ideas that are proposed in the memo are just that, they're ideas. This is your process. And so, you know, our job is not to be dictating what it should be, but to, you know, impart what our experience is and what our advice might be to help think about and further shape and define what this looks like. And with respect to the timeline, it's completely preliminary, and in my mind, in putting something together, it's easier to have something to respond to, right, than if we had a blank piece of paper. So that was something that we wanted to do, and I think that getting the steps down is really, you know, kind of critical. We don't have to go necessarily line by line tonight, but my goal is to really kind of talk through, and then we could digest this conversation and come back with something that's revised based on the feedback that we're getting. And then we can really flesh out what are the appropriate durations when we're talking about digesting feedback from the residents and from the development community and so forth. So I just don't want anybody thinking that this is anything set in stone. This is really a first crack for a discussion. So when Eric and I were talking, and he, you know, gave some background on this, and this is where kind of this came out, to say, okay, you've done this three times already in the last 7 years. We're talking about, you know, a fourth outreach. So that kind of got me thinking, do we need, should we do something differently? So that got me thinking about, you know, maybe we need to look at modifying this process. And Chairman, I agree that in reviewing all of the last documents, but in particular the 2014 RFP, I agree that it was definitely stepped, and it's not to say that an RFQ is only, you know, give me three references. I agree that it needs to be more than that. But we could talk through kind of what my thought was with respect to that. But the point is, how can we differentiate this process? Because I think that's warranted, that we need to somehow differentiate this process for the development community, because this is going to be the fourth go at it in 7 years, understanding that market conditions were definitely a driver in what the lack of results were, right, as particularly the first two go-arounds. But, you know, perception-wise, if there is, in fact, that perception that Ms. English-Dixon brought up, that this is a kind of a closed loop, I think that's another potential hurdle that we need to address. So do we need to do something a little bit different with the process? And not only with the process, do we need to do something a little bit different in terms of the information or what is being presented in the RFQ? What I'm getting at specifically is talking about the land assemblage and getting into that a little bit. So those were just a couple things that I wanted to discuss. But let's get into maybe, you know, again, this a little more of this defining what maybe a modified approach could be with respect to a Q versus a P. And really, I think all that I'm suggesting that might be a little bit different, again, in selecting a developer to negotiate with, is that the idea in my mind of selecting a preferred developer does not obligate the village to say, we're locked in with this person. We have to develop with them, and that's it. Of course not. The idea would be to select a preferred developer based on some criteria, not completely dissimilar to what you outlined in your prior RFP document in 2014, But the idea is that what I'm hearing is, and I'm hearing it even in this conversation tonight, is that you want to, the village wants to be able to have input and dialogue in a discussion and helping develop and craft a project that meets market viability and is, of course, going to meet the hurdles of community acceptance. Because if there's not community acceptance, then it's not going to go too far, and you've already experienced that. So I think that it's quite possible to have a process where you're getting all of kind of the typical qualifications from a developer, and you're getting an idea. I mean, and I think that it may be a good idea that if it's clear, for example, that this community is going to close the door on rental apartments, then I think you should state that. If you absolutely know, whether it's now or after a survey or outreach or whatever the process is going to end up being, if you know that there are things that are absolutely going to, you know, get the Heisman, then I think that, you know what I mean? Then I think that we should state that. Because to your point and others, why put people through the ringer, and why kind of get back to the point where we ended up before, which is non-acceptance for a certain type of a land use? I think if you're going to do that, I think that to the chairman's point, it should be from the perspective of here's land uses that we don't want to see. You know, we'd say it a little more elegantly than that, but here's what we don't want to see. But I agree that we want the market. You want, you know, thing, you know, ideas to choose from. You want people to come to the table. So I'm not a fan of it being overly prescriptive, because that, again, I think is going to limit the options that the village has. One of the big benefits, I think, to limiting maybe having all of the proposers, you know, put forth a financial proposal or put forth anything that's more detailed is, is that, and again, this really comes down to what your priority is, and that's one of the questions that I'd asked is that, from your perspective, is it more important to select a preferred developer that's the best fit for the village, given their experience and kind of this general idea of what they envision to be viable and to be a fit within the community? Or is the financial proposal, is that as important or more important than the fit and experience of somebody that you may choose to work with and negotiate with? So I don't know if you've got thoughts on that, but I'd love to get that feedback.
Well, I think the whoever we select needs to be able to perform. So that has to be a baseline criteria, right? They've got to be able to deliver debt and equity to a project, right? And so whoever we qualify we need to be assured they can do that.
But the question is the financial viability of the project or the economic benefit to the community versus whether or not the developer fits well. Is that your question?
The question is, it's related to that, but is it about how much somebody's going to offer for the village-owned land, basically? And that's going to directly be attributed to what they believe is the highest and best use and marketable for the site. So my question is that financial proposal more important or as important as getting the right fit, the right character of a company or development team to work with the Village of River Forest on the development of the site?
Let me ask something as part of that. So who makes the final decision on the qualified developer? Does it come down to our discussion, or does it go to the village board? Where's that decision made?
The board makes the final decision on that.
Okay.
We just make a recommendation. We've proven that that's where we stop.
Okay. I just wanted to verify that. I just wanted that understood.
It directs towards what you're saying, but Eric, what is the sentiment on the board, or isn't there any sentiment about development on this property, of the nature of what the development should be? What's the scuttlebutt, if there is any?
I don't think there's an official scuttlebutt at this point or desire. I think the board's looking back to this group and the consultant to help frame that, and that also becomes through the development world as well. But there's no mandate to go, well, we want to see X. I think the reoccurring goal here, and you hear this time and time again, is how do we expand our property tax base? How do we provide additional value to our assessed valuation in town? How do we do that? And there's a lot of different ways you can achieve that. And I think that's part of this group's charge, is to help flesh that out.
Jennifer, going back to two points you made, what could differentiate this process? Or not two points, but I think that's an important idea, because we have gone through other processes. And what's going to make this different, better, get more input, enthusiasm? And I think there's maybe two things that come to mind, in my mind. How we can do it. One is to have community input dialogue is a better word, before the RFP is issued, and reflect that in the RFP so that the development community can get a sense that this has been thought through, not just by a single board or individual, but by the community. And I think then they are working on the idea there's some consensus about what ought to be done prior to the issuance of the RFP. So that's, community dialogue before and having that part of the RFP would make it different, because that didn't happen before. And the second thing, that given your experience in doing these kind of processes, I think you could, we could engage in more direct outreach to the development community when we issue the RFP. So it's not just on the street, but there are phone calls made. There are people, that we may not be able to do as commissioners, because we might be perceived as being not even handed. You could do that as an independent third party. You could reach out to specific developers that you think should be interested in this RFP and make sure it's on their desk and they're seriously considering it.
And that's exactly part of what we would propose to do. I think the other part, and I want to get a little more definition again on the prior processes, but are these developer roundtables. Again, I think the community input is a very important component, but I don't want to overlook the importance of reaching out to the development community as another way to help inform what this thing, what this document, what this solicitation is, and also to start, again, pre-marketing the site and the opportunity and communicating with them. So that's something that I think is really important, that we think is, it's a really good, that's a good market study right there, quite frankly, to get that input back. But I'd like to learn a little bit more. I know the last process, there were certainly site tours for interested parties. Can you talk a little bit about what that process ensued and entailed, and how much of a dialogue was it, or was it just really more informational and here's the site, and I just want to understand that a little bit.
Probably more informational.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, we definitely want to have more, of a dialogue and engaged process with, and I'll say the development community, because in my mind, from our perspective, it's not going to just be developers. We have the list, of course, that you sent it out to the folks you sent it to last time, and I'm not saying that we're not going to include those folks this go around, but we obviously want to bring in, we want to expand this scope. We want to reach out to folks, not just in the region, in Chicagoland, but, in the region, and to the extent that it makes sense to put this out, nationally, why not? I mean, I think, sometimes the way to get the best ideas is to get a lot of ideas. I don't always think that way, but in these types of instances, I think that it could be a good thing. But also reaching out to the other professionals that work with and touch a lot of these different folks, like architects and engineers, even environmental consultants that are working with developers and folks that are, again, working in and around this area, but also outside of this area, that might have some really interesting perspectives or views to bring to the table. So that's something that we would propose to do to enhance this process.
Just a couple questions, though. And I think just to kind of tap into something that Tom said, I think a key element of difference this time is that we will have a third party between us and the community, the development community, which I think will give a different aura or brand to the effort. But I want to make sure that as we talk about how Ehlers can expand the exposure to
make sure that when we have these conversations, we temper them against a little bit of the reality. This isn't the largest site on earth. This is, you know, a relatively small project in the scope of many developers. And the idea that we may find ourselves attracting an outer regional developer to spend the energy to do this, unless they just need something to do, might be a little much. I don't want us to, I mean, it would be great if we get some outsiders that have a great view and they have the bandwidth to actually jump into a project of this scale. I mean, it's not even, you know, we're not even building a high-rise like Oak Park, because we won't get that done. But I just want us to just keep that in mind. I think it's great to broaden the view, but I would find it highly suspect to think that we'll get a national scale developer to walk into this deal.
No, I don't disagree with you. And I think that, you know, the level of effort is, there's really not any measurable difference in terms of our level of effort to do that type of outreach. But I think if we could just be open-minded about it, and I agree, I don't think we're going to have five nationals knocking on the door. I agree with that 100%. But I certainly think that there's no harm.
No.
And I know you're not saying that, but that, you know, that it can only, number one, differentiate things, and number two, open up the door to some other thoughts or ideas.
I think one of the things I would be curious about, timelines, all right? It's going to take a while to get this process moving, develop the RFP, allow people to get it back, and then go through the process of figuring out who we're going to spend time with and how you then, you know, pass it off to the board and for the board to actually agree that this is the right movement. Realistically, when you've done this for other communities, what is a realistic timeline?
It could be every bit of a year or more.
Right, before we even have a developer chosen.
Well, I mean, it depends. I mean, you could be at the point where you're negotiating an RDA in a year.
Okay.
I've seen it done.
All right. So yeah. I just sit there and I sit and go like, guys, let's just be, we had to think about, there's a lot of time that we're going to wind up spending with Ehlers to even get to the point of having picked this developer. We could be in 2018. And that's... Mm-hmm. But that actually has an RDA in
right.
January of 2018. We may not even have a developer chosen by this time next year.
That's possible. I mean, you guys are driving the ship. That's absolutely possible, without a doubt.
Is it realistic to try to figure out ways to expedite this? And I think you could provide insights on ways that we can dual track things. I'm really, really concerned about the cycle, guys. Mm-hmm. I honestly mm-hmm. am genuinely concerned about the cycle and the influence that's going to have on the sort of proposals that we're going to see as people are going to hedge their bets and try to, you know, come up with what may be the simplest common denominator project. It just won't get us there. If we actually allow this to drag out too long. So
let me share an example from another community that we're working with, and I don't want to say that it's not important who the community is, but I just want to share this thought with you, in that they were working on phase one of a downtown plan, and they're working with a developer, and basically they set forth parameters to say, okay, here's hurdles that you need to meet and achieve, otherwise we're going back out to the well. Well, the developer blew it, so they're going back out to the well. I personally think that the parameters were extended too long, given this particular developer's performance or lack thereof to achieve the milestone goals that were set to be able to move this forward. And now they're kind of like, they're feeling like they're back at square one. The reason that I bring this up is to say, however this ultimately shakes out, meaning, do you solicit and you're heavier on the proposal side up front, you know, from the world, you know, the universe that we put this out to, versus selecting a developer with fewer submittal requirements and then saying, okay, I'm making this up right now, we're going to take 45 days or whatever, 30 days to get a detailed proposal from them and have the shell of, you know, at least a term sheet together. where you are understanding the financials, you're understanding, you know, what obviously what the details are of the proposal, you're getting a semblance of a development program and site plan, and then, you know, you're getting enough to where the village feels like, yeah, we want to move forward, or no, we don't, but we're not 6 months in it, to your point, and then we're going to go back to the well. But think about, I just want you to think about this well, and if you go down a path and for whatever reason the developer or the project that you think you want to work with, for one reason or another, the wheels come off, okay, and it's happened. It happens everywhere. These things happen. How far or how much do you want to ask the development community when you're going out the first time to invest in that response, understanding that there is that outside chance that whoever you choose, whatever that process is, whoever you choose, for whatever reason, it may not move forward and you may have to go back. And is there a concern about going back to that well and these folks saying, I just, you know, spent X amount of time giving you
this
list.
That's where we are.
That's exactly where we are.
Okay, well, then okay, but so let's, that's why I'm proposing at least, nice to meet you. That's why I'm proposing at least to think about some, and it's, and again, it's not that big of a change from what you did before, to maybe back off some of the requirements to pick someone to start negotiating and working with. Then I feel that the village then has that opportunity to have that dialogue and further flesh out the details of what's going to be viable, and you're hearing from them what's going to be viable, and hopefully the two will meet and you can move forward.
So that's a dual track? That's actually a double track effort, right? Working with the, trying to get the community's input in addition to trying to identify a developer simultaneously and hoping that...
No, I think that you have to get some... I think you do need to get some... And again, this the notion of the community, the resident feedback is something that, you know, the idea was initially pitched as the survey. So I feel like this is something that definitely needs to be discussed more of what that is. But I do think that there needs to be not just the resident input, but we absolutely envision the developer community input mm-hmm. coming before that document is crafted. I mean, I think that really helps inform what the document is, and it also tees up the opportunity with the development community, like, hey, this is coming. I had some input on it. I know about it. So they can give you a better informed idea, however we define that in terms of the submittal. So I do think that has to come before. I do. So that would be my recommendation.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
I just wanted to throw out some of my hopes for the process of things I think are useful. I don't know if we've pursued it before, but are you familiar with WeWork?
Yeah, I am. They're over in the west.
Downtown.
Yeah,
they're all over the place.
Location. Mm-hmm. And I think something like that would be, not that we can pick a tenant like that, but encouraging the notion of having a mixed-use space that has commercial office rental space, or it could be a WeWork, it could be commercial condominiums, the benefit of which would be that the parking situation kind of have the reverse commute, and when people are leaving, people are coming in on the train. A lot of the WeWork people would be taking a CTA, but if you have WeWork or something like that there with designers, developers, other people that are knowledge workers working, then at lunchtime you can support the businesses that are on the first floor if there's restaurants or things like that. I think that's been one of the challenges we have is Lake Street's kind of dead, but having options for people who are accounting, salespeople, whatever, to be able to have a place they can go to work that's nearby, I think that's, at least from my perspective, that's something that I might even consider, you know, taking part of. In terms of the apartments, I don't think that there's a resistance out there for senior rental housing. I wasn't involved with the last discussions, but I think a lot of people have, you know, elderly family members that they'd like to be able to have nearby. The other thing that I think could work is the idea of doing efficiency condos. I don't think they'd have the same parking problems. I think the demand there would be really good because of all the universities nearby. You know, if they were studios or one bedrooms, I think there's a lot of market for that product. But again, you know, the developer's got to run with it. But it seems to me, from what I heard, that the resistance more is the idea of having apartments that aren't going to be packed with kids and multiple people in there, that are going to be families moving into them. That's what I gathered was kind of the no stop from what I've heard.
Well, and to address your points in terms of ideas for the specific land uses, in my mind, this is a great opportunity of the roundtables to flesh out some of these ideas, at least in concept, to see how they strike developers that are in different spaces, in different land use spaces. So I think that's a great way to kind of get this informal market reaction to that, of how realistic it is. And one thing, I just got to say it, with respect to the apartments and maybe some of the perceptions that are out there, that rental apartments would be packed with school-age kids. And Ms. English-Dixon hit it on the head, I mean, in terms of what the market, what the market data and realities are. We had a similar, it's not a similar project, but it was a similar discussion about this land use in another community, where we were advising them, the way it came into play was looking at what would the impact be if taller buildings were allowed in their downtown. So they're modifying their downtown plan. It's a community not dissimilar to River Forest. They are a great location, affluent. They have a metro station. You know, their downtown area is pretty insular, so it's pretty much used. They don't have a great visibility. You've got great visibility, but it's a little bit insular. But in any case, so the apartment discussion came into play. And not dissimilar to this market, if you were to do apartments there, they would be clearly in excess of $2 a square foot, which is the same or greater than many people's mortgage payments. And so that is always something that is interesting to me when I hear that thought is, number one, you know, data shows they're typically not overrun with school-age children. I mean, that's just a fact. And number two, these are not the resistance or the comments that were there was specific to the income levels of the folks and what the perceptions were related around socioeconomic demographics, mm-hmm. of who would be living in these. You know, these are hypothetical apartments when we were just talking about land use types. But when you're talking about over $2 a square foot, you know, in 1,000 square foot, you know, you do the math, it's over $2,000 a month to live somewhere. These are folks that, you know, have a substantial income. I'll just say that. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to say that.
Thank you.
I'm sure you had discussed
it's
it.
It's not the first time those things were said.
I know, I'm not saying anything groundbreaking, but it's just, you know, sometimes you have to say it a lot.
Okay, well, you know, we're not going to design a schedule here by committee. I think unless there's more input you want from us, or if commissioners have more.
Well, yeah, I want to hear if there's other comments, and then I want to recap what I think I'm hearing for some direction.
Okay, that would be great. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Were there other comments or?
The only other comment I made at the last meeting is my concern is that if it's too developer led and it's all about the profits, and we end up with a dead streetscape with brick wall and no storefronts, that's a concern there. And I would really hope that it'd be clear that we're looking to have the retail, the sidewalk space with storefronts.
I think we need to figure out if the market really supports that, Lee. I think we might want the market to tell us that.
If we go that route, we end up with another dead zone. There's a theory of, we want tax base. Yes, we want tax base, but there's a lot of people that don't like the fact that there's not a place in River Forest that they can go to have a party, have a meal out. There's not a lot of restaurants. There's not a lot of things. And if we don't say that we want retail, a lot of times it becomes more efficient to, we'll put a parking garage in there and all the will just be another residential building with no commerce going on.
So from my perspective, I
want to see that we do have that walking retail. I think that's important to me. I think that a lot of development happens where they're just pushed aside what's efficient. Yeah.
Go ahead, Nina.
There are a couple issues related to that. A lot of that for retail is economics and construction costs and what they can afford and what the traffic will bear. There's a vast difference between Lake and Park and Harlem and Lake. And you can have retail synergy down there. Can you, because there's a portion of the population within River Forest that would like to have white table tablecloth doesn't mean that that's large enough to, that portion is large enough to support the economics it's going to cost for a restaurant to go in there or retail. So it is market driven to a large extent on the economics.
And our approach last time was to ask them to maximize that to the extent the market would allow. That was our approach. And we got different answers on that question, different developers that the more modest ones were ones we thought made sense. But we did insist on having some level of retail.
Well, further to that restaurant concept, I remember Cy Taxman sitting here before we had phase one done, in the concept of a sit-down restaurant, and he was willing to walk away from the deal. Too many parking spaces, taking up 45 minutes to an hour, hour and a half. He said, you're going to destroy my retail clients who will demand a certain amount of parking. Now, I'd love to have a nice restaurant there, but I can't even see how the retail is really going to work in this area when parking is going to be a challenge, however the deal is done. So trying to cram more people coming in and out, in and out. I think we're trying to put 5 quarts in a 4-quart jar.
I think from
in terms of, you know, the traffic,
yeah.
I would discourage a sit-down restaurant unless that's all it's going to be.
Yeah.
Period. You know, and then a big chunk of that is parking, and I would think that would be pie in the sky if something like that happened, you know. Let us entertain us that River Forest is just where I want to go. Well, we're not that hip community that's driving, you know, all this, that type of traffic. So anyway, that's my, I got a lesson in
WeWork, having commercial, having a lot of workers nearby, you'd almost have to have that to support some of the operations. But the parking point is a very important one too, because if you're going to do something, there's going to have to be parking, a parking garage or something adjacent if you're going to accommodate cars.
I think the opportunity to tell the development community things that are of interest and then have the development community respond with their thoughts on how economically and physically possible some of those options may be could be a way to address the thought, Lee. I mean, because I think we are all very, we think it would be very cool to have a very energized Lake Street, but we also are very concerned about having a lot of vacant storefronts and looking at this stretch compared to like even Forest Park and Madison and looking at how much vacancy continues to prevail there with a lot more walk-through traffic, a lot more parking availability, and so trying to balance those. But I think putting it out there and saying, you know, we'd love to have a very energized street front, street level. How do you do that? Do you think that's possible? And then let the market kind of come back and say, yeah, but you want more traffic? You want more cars? How do you do that? That tension may work itself out somehow. Maybe that's a way to address that question or that option.
I agree. I mean, the more that you can express things in that way without being overly prescriptive, any experienced developer is going to understand. They're going to pick up what you're laying down. See what I mean? So I think that's a good approach. One other thing that I would like to get feedback on before I recap is the land assemblage. So I know in the last go-around there was just, I'm calling it Site C, but it's basically that piece in between the village-owned parcels, and that's the same owner that's to the east of the hard corner. Mm-hmm. What, if anything, does the village think that it needs to do to further conversations with that owner to have them be an active participant and have that boundary?
Well, just so you know, he's here, so you can talk to him directly if you want to.
I thought he might be right. I wasn't sure. I'm like, is it this gentleman or this gentleman? Okay, so I don't know if that's appropriate to have that conversation now, but it's just something that I wanted to raise because I think it's important when we're talking about what the development opportunity is. And is it possible to have it a little bit better defined in the solicitation document to say this, that this is the assemblage?
No.
Hi, Mr. Strand.
I think any kind of dialogue you can have would be great, appropriate, and helpful.
Okay, so yeah. You know, we'll I'll be reaching out to Sir, and maybe we can have a meeting at some point to talk about that. But I think that's important to the extent that you're willing to sit down and chat about it. Great, thank you. So just to recap, when I'm looking at what we're going to do is we're going to go back to this thing, to this preliminary timeline. And the biggest thing that I'm taking away from this is that the resident input, whatever that is, that needs to be defined somehow of what that looks like, what, you know, what are the objectives with that, what do we want that process to look like. And then to the comment of really being concerned about the cycle, the market cycle, and the timing of getting this out, I would propose that once we better define what the solicitation document is going to be in terms, really the key thing is what are the submittal requirements, what are the steps, and how many steps in the issue, how limited should it be to be conscientious about wanting to have this move, is that that could be drafted, and then the I would suggest, and what we've done in the past, is taking the feedback from the developer roundtables as well as whatever the community input process is going to be, and I like to have that in as raw but cleaned up presentable state as possible rather than a consultant or somebody else trying to paraphrase it and really have that be an attachment or an appendix to whatever the solicitation document is. I mean, I think we could certainly recap it, but I think that's something we might want to consider. If we're going to do this and go to the time, you know, and the effort to solicit this, then I think it may be important to consider letting the development committee hear, air quotes, from what that feedback was rather than have it translated.
Just to be clear, what you're suggesting is create a draft RFP circulated around community and to our community, River Forest residents, and to the development community, get their feedback before we finalize it.
I'm not suggesting we circulate an RFP draft. Okay. In my mind, that draft goes to this, to either a working group or to this commission, but it'll ultimately come to this commission first, and then it would have, then again, it'd be your recommendation to the village board. I don't see the document going out to the community.
Okay. So what are you suggesting we put in front of the development community in advance of the RFP?
I'm talking about a roundtable discussions where we would talk about the site and have really probably no more than 3 to 5 questions that we would develop. And again, I would want either some work group or this committee to review those in advance, and then we would get that feedback.
Right. So one of the things Ehlers had proposed is creating the small work group. So what we're envisioning is myself, 2 members from the EDC, and 2 members from the village board to sit down collectively and help flesh out a lot of these things. As you know, it can be challenging to do all this work via committee. So the village president's working on putting together recommendations on who would sit on that group, and then that work group would spend most of its activity on the front end in terms of preparing and crystallizing a lot of these materials. But then that whatever that RFP, RFQ looks like, that final draft still comes back here and then would still go to the village board for approval.
But I think to the chair's question, what you were asking is the citizen feedback is going to go to the developers in the round table for their kind of reflection and comment, I think is what
No, you're I'm not necessarily saying that, no, that it wouldn't go to the round table. It's going to go into the solicitation document. Yes, yeah. We go into the
yes.
document.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
And again, just the point on, again, to the suggestion of a work group is, again, to kind of have this ability to kind of green light and approve these smaller interim steps so that we're not bogged down, again, in having it to be a committee meeting every time. Otherwise, this could be a very, very long process. But that's ultimately your decision.
And just for the record, Mr. O'Connell and I did talk today. He was in favor of the RFQ concept, but one of his concerns was the timeline. And I did speak.
That's too long?
That's too long. Uh-huh. Yeah. And again, the one of I spoke to the village president today as well, and that was the other comment, too. It's like, how do we start to shrink this? And I think those are discussions we'll just have to have and try to workshop that.
Okay.
Okay.
Are we good?
I've got some great feedback here and great notes, and I very much appreciate your time and your thoughtful comments. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Yeah.
Thanks.
I'd like to go back to our first order of business of public comment, because we didn't have public here earlier when I asked for it. If there is any right now, we'd be happy to accept any public comment. Okay. Absent that, let's move on to the other business. Do we have any other business here? Quick update on Fresh Times.
What's they're moving along. You know, there's no inflatable animal there anymore, okay. Which is always nice. You know, the First Amendment brings wonderful things. But I know they're moving ahead very well and very quickly. I have not been on site recently, so I haven't been inside, so I haven't seen anything. But from my reports I get from our inspectors, they are moving along. You know, we're hearing they're ahead of schedule, but, you know, there's no other than their August 1st target date, there's no other update.
Okay.
Lake and Lathrop, the developer has acquired the Ditchfield property, so they own that now, and they're working with the remaining property owner as we speak.
Okay.
Yes.
Excellent. All right. Thank you. So what about schedule for the next meeting where we would no doubt have another substantive discussion of this process? Let's open our calendars. End of May?
Probably, yeah.
End of May?
No.
Into
May. I
into
mean, early May, I think, might make more sense in terms of in the interest of moving this project along.
Mm-hmm.
Week of the 7th, 8, 9, 10.
Yeah, we have a board meeting and are swearing in on the 8th in the evening. You know, we could do the morning if you wanted. If you wanted to do an evening, any other Wednesday would be good.
Wednesday the
10th. Okay.
Does that work?
Yep.
Sure.
May 10th. Okay.
6 o'clock. 7. Can we do 7? 6 is like the middle of the day.
Whatever you guys want.
7 p.m. 7
p.m. Does
that
work by the
10th? Okay. Great.
7 p.m.
Any other business comments? Do I have a motion to adjourn? A second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Meeting adjourned. Thank you very much.